Welcome to Sports Mad Rez's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This past week, we had one post on sportsmedrez.org. That's res.org. This post highlighted a study in which the authors found that a functional brace following surgery to repair an acute Achilles tendon rupture is safe and results in higher patient satisfaction than immobilization after surgery. Here to chat this week is Dr. Jay Hurdle, a professor from the University of Virginia who's been a longtime supporter of sportsmedrez.org. He's authored or co-authored over 150 publications, and one of his primary interests include lateral ankle instability. Welcome, Dr. Hurdle.
Great. Thanks, Jeff.
So to get us started, could you kind of tell us about your research?
Sure. So we do research in the areas of ankle sprains and chronic ankle instability, and we really focus on translational and clinical research as it relates to those two pathologies. So we do a fair amount of laboratory research that is related to applied biomechanics and motor control issues. And then we do keep it all relative to clinical practice, though. So looking at issues like pathomechanics, prevention, diagnosis, and treatment, because we're definitely doing this to try to improve patient outcomes. We've done a fair amount of intervention studies, looking at therapeutic exercise and manual therapy interventions, and we've even ventured into some epidemiology topics as well.
Great. Could you offer listeners some insight into how you think your research will change how they practice sports medicine today?
Sure. You know, I think a big take-home message is that rehabilitation works. So, you know, if you look at comprehensive intervention programs for ankle sprains or chronic ankle instability that involve therapeutic exercise, that involve joint mobilizations for the talocrural and the tibiofibular joints, that they definitely do lead to improved outcomes, both in terms of patient-reported outcomes as well as, you know, towards our biomechanical and neuromuscular measures as well. I think one of the challenges that we face, though, is needing to improve how many patients actually perform rehabilitation and then the compliance with those programs. So we actually have a paper in review right now where we were able to look at a national insurance database from the U.S. that we were able to get the health records of nearly 100,000 patients that were treated with ankle sprains or that were diagnosed with ankle sprains, and less than 10% of them received supervised rehabilitation, at least in the form of a billable physical therapy within 30 days of their ankle sprain diagnosis. So I think that's one of the big challenges we have right now, you know, is the notion that we know that that supervised rehabilitation works, but yet even though it's in lots of position statements about best practices for the treatment of ankle sprain, people actually don't do it. So That is something that, you know, we just want to reinforce to clinicians that rehabilitation works. You know, I think some other aspects that have clinical takeaways, the notion that neuromuscular deficits associated with ankle sprains and chronic ankle instability aren't just limited to the muscles that cross the injured ankle, but that we've got neuromuscular alterations on the same limb that are at joints proximal to the injured ankle, also muscles that affect both the knee and the hip, and even, you know, seeing motor control differences on the uninjured contralateral side. And I think that, you know, those are important issues when it comes to diagnosis and treatment. You know, as we're diagnosing patients and looking for impairments, we can't just focus specifically at the injured joint, that we've got to look at the whole lower quarter system. And then the same thing on the treatment side, that, you know, if we're not thinking about those deficits enough to evaluate them, we're unlikely to think about them enough to treat them as well. So we've really been trying to push this treatment paradigm that we call assess, treat, reassess, that is getting away from kind of standardized protocols. You know, we don't want to give the same treatment protocol to everybody with an ankle sprain or with chronic ankle instability. Instead, what we want to do is make sure that our assessment is hitting all the bases. And then when we do identify deficits, that our treatments are geared at specific impairments that the individual patients have, and then obviously to reassess those same deficits as we progress our treatment. I think kind of the last thing we see there is that the notion of rehabilitation seems to be fairly domain specific. And what I mean by that is, you know, balance training improves muscle control. Strength training improves muscle force output. And we need to be thinking about those things and making sure that we're looking for deficits so we can treat them importantly. And I guess, you know, probably the last takeaway that we've seen is that we've done a fair amount of work with gait analysis and instrumented gait analysis and found alterations related to chronic ankle instability. But when we've done intervention studies that have focused on range of motion and strength and balance, we haven't been able to improve or alter patients' gait. So yes, we can get them to feel better. We can get their balance and their strength and their range of motion back towards normal, but the gait deficits are still persisting. So I think that's, you know, kind of one of the future areas that we're looking at is in terms of trying to identify some specific gait interventions.
So besides the gait interventions, are there other things in the pipeline that you think we're going to see 5-10 years down the road that's really going to change how we're approaching ankle rehab?
I hope so. You know, one area that we're looking at, and it's not just specific to ankle rehabilitation, but I think all lower extremity rehabilitation, is the notion of assessing and treating the intrinsic foot muscles. And that's really a muscle group that has been largely ignored in almost all of musculoskeletal medicine. And, you know, for example, you can look at the APTA put out a best practices document on treating plantar fasciitis, and therapeutic exercise isn't in it, which is amazing coming, you know, from physical therapy. And that's not a jab at the APTA. It's just kind of, you know, where we are when we think about the role of the intrinsic foot muscle. So yeah, I think we're going to see a lot in terms of research, in terms of the assessment of those muscles, and also in terms of the ability to do targeted exercises to activate specific intrinsic foot muscles and see how they relate to lower extremity function, you know, whether that be, you know, things that we see related to hyperpronation, or as well as, you know, after acute injuries as well. So that's one area that we're definitely excited about and doing some interesting work that's in the pipeline right now. I think a second area is going to be, you know, around the gait analysis and the motion analysis in general. And that's going to be the notion of wearable sensors and being able to assess athletes in their natural habitats. You know, so right now, when we're looking at, you know, jump landing or gait mechanics, we're doing that all in a lab where we bring the athletes in, you know, we marker them up, attach all kinds of sensors, and then, you know, tell them to run normally or cut normally and things like that. I think the technology on the wearable sensors is going to infiltrate sports medicine within the next 5 or 10 years here to where we'll be doing more assessments, you know, in the field. And I think that, you know, at least at the elite sports medicine levels, you're going to see that becoming more routine within the next few years. And I think that's really exciting about the notion of, you know, being able to take instrumented measurement outside of the lab and actually, you know, be able to actually assess athletes as they're practicing and conditioning and things like that. So I think that is going to influence, you know, how we do assessments. It's not just going to be with our hands as much.
Sounds exciting. Thanks, Dr. Hurdle. It's great having you on the podcast this week. To our listeners, don't forget that we also share extra material on social media. For example, this past week, our social media posts included a news article from Frontline, which described new research suggesting that 87 deceased NFL players may have had chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Remember, you can always follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.